Next one. Well, we're live. And first of all, the story so far. Now, last week, David covered Judges chapter 6. He dealt briefly with the annual invasion of Israel by the Midianites and the people's cry to the Lord after 7 years of their oppression, dealt with the message of a prophet who in God's name denounced the people's idolatry with the appearance of the angel of the Lord to Gideon and Gideon's commission that with God's presence and help he would save Israel from the hand of Midian. With Gideon's destruction of his father's altar to Baal and its consequences, with the arrival now of the Midianites for the 7th year running, and Gideon's summons to 4 of Israel's tribes to form an army and defend themselves. And then finally, he talked of God's confirmation by way of 2 fleece signs that God would indeed deliver Israel by the hand of Gideon. And our chapter for this morning takes up the story. But first, verse 33 of chapter 6. All the Midianites and Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and crossing over, they encamped in the valley of Jezreel. Then chapter 7, verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him, rose early and encamped beside the spring of Harod. And the camp of the Midianites was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. The Lord said to Gideon, "The people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast themselves against me, saying, 'My own hand has saved me.' Now, therefore, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, 'Whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead.' And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'The people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. And it will be that of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, the same shall go with you. And of whomever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same shall not go.' So he brought the people down to the water. The Lord said to Gideon, 'Everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set apart by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink.' And the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people knelt down to drink water. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'By the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the people go, every man to his place.' So they took the people's provisions and trumpets in their hands. And he sent all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, but retained the 300 men. And the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. That same night the Lord said to him, 'Arise, go down against the camp, for I have delivered it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Phura, your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward your hands shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. Then he went down with Phurah his servant to the outskirts of the military camp. And the Midianites and Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley like locusts in abundance, and their camels without number as the sand by the seashore in multitude. And when Gideon had come, behold, there was a man telling a dream to his companion, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream. Behold, a round loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian, and came to the tent, and struck it, so that it fell, and turned upside down, that the tent fell flat. His companion answered and said, this is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has delivered into his hand Midian and all the camp. And so it was. When Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, that he worshipped, and he returned to the camp of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord has delivered the camp of Midian into your hand. And he divided the 300 men into 3 companies, and he put trumpets into the hands of all, with empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. And he said to them, look at me, and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, you shall do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you also blow the trumpets on every side of the whole camp, and say, for the Lord, and for Gideon. And so Gideon and 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp, at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch. And they blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers which were in their hands. And the 3 companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers and held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And every man stood in his place around the camp. And the whole army ran and cried out and fled. And they blew the 300 trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his companion, even throughout the whole camp. And the army fled to Bethshitta, toward Zerera, as far as the border of Abel-Meholah, by Tabat. And the men of Israel gathered together from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh, and pursued the Midianites. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites, and seize the waters of Jordan ahead of them, as far as Bethbara. So all the men of Ephraim gathered together and seized the watering places as far as Bethbara and the Jordan. And they took 2 princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, and they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they killed at the winepress of Zeeb. And they pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon beyond the Jordan. Well, it may be that by the use of Gideon's name, Jerubbaal, in the opening verse, that the Holy Spirit is connecting this public victory of chapter 7 deliberately with the home victory that was recorded back in chapter 6. But if in chapter 6 we read of a so-called God who needed his followers to plead for and to save him, and now in chapter 7 we read of the true and living God who is able to save his people. Now in the opening scene, Gideon and Israel's army were pitched about 4 miles south of the huge Midianite army, beside a spring later known in memory of this very occasion as the spring of trembling. And who can blame? Many in the Israelite army for trembling. For although in total they numbered 32,000, the Midianite army numbered well over four times that, namely 135,000. And they were clearly visible from Israel's chosen vantage point on the lower slopes of Mount Gilboa. Then came the bombshell. It is at this point that the Lord spoke to Gideon about there being too many, but not as a spectator might have thought, too many Midianites. Now it is true that in normal warfare conditions, as our Lord Jesus himself observed, any leader would think very carefully before tackling forces twice the size of his own, let alone, as in this case, four times the size. But here the Lord told Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast themselves against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. For in this case, the Lord wanted the odds stacked so badly against Israel that all would agree that the victory must be chalked up to his credit and his honor. And with our eye on Paul's words in 2 Corinthians 12, his, that is, the Lord's strength, was made perfect in human weakness. He is prepared to give his people the victory, but not the glory. And so God instructs Gideon to pare down his army by two simple tests. First, to allow all who were fearful to return back home. Now God's law itself had prescribed, when you go out to battle against your enemies, the officers shall speak to the people and say, what man is there who is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest his brethren's heart melt as his heart. But here in Judges 7, the object was not to fortify the spirit of the remaining troops. It was to prevent the people from glorying in themselves. And that proclamation resulted in over two-thirds of the original army heading for home. Gideon was left with only 10,000. But no cause for alarm he may have felt. After all, had not Deborah and Barak defeated the mighty Canaanite army of Jabin and Sisera, together with their 900 iron chariots, back in chapter 4? With just that? Namely, with an army of only 10,000 men? But there was a second winnowing test to be applied. It's what you might call the test of the lappers and the kneelers. Now I know of many who extol the merit of lapping as opposed to kneeling here, in terms of self-control, terms of remaining alert, ready to respond to the sudden demands of battle. I'm not by any means satisfied that the Lord had any such distinction in mind. He certainly gave no hint of it to Gideon. The purpose of the test seems rather, very simply, to split down the 10,000 troops into two groups. But it certainly did that. The final score was 300 lappers and 9,700 kneelers. And then God told Gideon that he would save Israel with the 300 men who lacked. The rest were sent back home. Now back in chapter 5, Deborah and Barak had come down very heavily on those in Israel who had refused to offer their services in the time of a crisis. And yet now, 9,700 willing, courageous men who had refused to go home with the 22,000, they are told, in effect, that their services are no longer required. suspect that Gideon didn't find telling them that particularly easy. When we read in verse 8 that Gideon retained the 300 men, that word may imply that these men had a strong urge now, in the circumstances, to join their former comrades and vanish homewards. But with just a handful of men, Gideon faced an army of 135,000 Midianites, now less than an hour's march away. The odds were now 450-1 against, identical as it happens to those faced about 250 years later by one Elijah on Mount Carmel. We can well understand why, now with less than 1% of his original fighting force, which had been greatly outnumbered anyway, Gideon's faith now wavered a little. I suppose that strictly speaking, since Gideon was obviously afraid, he should have returned home with the 22,000 earlier. But the Lord graciously encouraged him, strengthened his hands, is the biblical language, and strengthened his hands in two ways. First, with his promise. Not, I note, his promise that he would deliver the Midianite camp into Gideon's hand, but that he had already done so. In God's purpose, and there's no one going to thwart that, Midian was already a defeated foe. And then second, by telling Gideon to make a secret, a stealthy visit to the Midianite military camp. And it was there, by preserving Gideon from being spotted, by directing Gideon's feet to the right men, by a dream which he, the Lord, put into one man's head and an interpretation he put into another man's mouth, with providentially everything timed to perfection, the Lord gave Gideon all the reassurance he needed. Barley bread, as the food of the poor, doubtless the staple food of the Israelites during the Midianite oppression, was a fitting symbol of Gideon. Man, humble origin, station in life. The tent, as the text of verse 13 properly reads, was likely the most important tent in the camp. That would be that of the captain of the army. And clearly even the common soldiers of the Midianite army had heard of Gideon's plans to engage them in battle, though I guess not yet of his greatly depleted force. The words at the end of verse 13 are heaped up by the Spirit to stress the complete overthrow of the tent, symbolic, of course, of the utter destruction of the Midianite host. A rock thundering down the hillside might have sufficient mass and momentum to level a tent, but a small barley loaf certainly would not. And the second soldier, with a skill to match Joseph as an interpreter of dreams, concluded that it was God himself who would deliver the whole Midianite army into Gideon's hand. Having taken the time to prostrate himself before the Lord in grateful worship, Gideon called his 300 men to attention and in faith assured them, in the words which he had heard both from the Lord himself and the second Midianite soldier, that the Lord had delivered the army of Midian into their hand. No longer is Gideon concerned with the size of the enemy army. What are 135,000 men against 300, if the 300 have God as their ally? Back in Joshua 7, self-confidence and ignorance had led Israel to field a small force in battle, to their great cost. But here in Judges 7, it was faith.
by dividing his men into three groups, by spreading them around the Midianites, and by his great nighttime multimedia performance with deafening sound effects, blaring ram's horn trumpets and bellowing war cry, and blinding lights in every direction, torches flaring up with a sudden blaze as the earthenware pitchers were smashed.
Trying to get myself there.
By those means, Gideon was able to create the impression of vast columns of invading troops. And his timing was as carefully chosen as his strategy. The action began at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch, which of course is nothing to do with the clocks going back, Mr. Farr, but at the key moment when most of the, as we move on, the middle of the watch, when they just set the watch, it was at the moment, at that key moment when most of the Midianites would have been deep in sleep, and when the first shift had now just fallen asleep, and the second shift were not fully awake, it was then that the fireworks went off. 300 trumpets blasted, 300 torches lit up the darkness, and then, to add to the nightmare, a ringing battle cry pierced the night air. Every man of Gideon's 300 stood, we are told, in his place. But the Midianites certainly didn't stand. They fled, well, at least those that were able to flee did, because in the confusion and mayhem, with men from three different nations running to and fro, unable to distinguish friend from foe in the darkness, vast numbers of them died as they fought among themselves, thinking that the enemy forces had broken through into their camp. Although you and I know, of course, that in the final analysis, it was the Lord who set every man's sword against his companion. And so a chapter which began with subtraction in the army of Israel ends with division in the camp of the Midianites. And men from several tribes of Israel set off in hot pursuit of the Midianite survivors, including, it seems, some of those who had been sent away earlier. At Gideon's request, the fighting men of the tribe of Ephraim, they joined in. They took possession of the fords of Jordan before the Midianites, who could only move quite slowly with their many flocks and herds, before they were able to reach there. The rock, known afterwards as the Rock of Ereb, and the winepress, known as the winepress of Zeb, were so named on account of being the places where these two princes were taken and slain. Now, I recall that the story began with Israel hiding from the Midianites in caves and rocks, and with Gideon threshing wheat at a winepress. And now the story ends, ironically, with two Midianite leaders slain, one at a rock and the other at a winepress. In later days, the events of Judges 7 became proverbial in Israel. Deal with them, your enemies, O Lord, that is, as with Midian. Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeb. And so pleads the psalmist in Psalm 83, and for his part, Isaiah says of Assyria in chapter 10 of his book, "The Lord of hosts will stir up a scourge for him like the slaughter of Midian at the rock of Ereb." Israel never forgot Judges 7. Now, I know that Gideon's death at a good old age isn't recorded until verse 32 of the following chapter, but if we ever wanted an epitaph to go on the man's tombstone, I guess we could do no better than engrave the words of Hebrews chapter 11, Time would fail me, he said, to tell of Gideon, and so on, who through faith were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, and put foreign armies to flight. Now in all, Gideon was involved in 3 separate conflicts, with Baal in chapter 6, with Midian in chapter 7, and sadly with some of his own nation in chapter 8, though I leave you to read that final section for yourselves. Now for my part, in the light of this very brief study, I can't do better than leave the last words with an inspired writer. I choose the Apostle Paul. First, from 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Not that we are competent of ourselves. Our competence is from God. And then from chapter 4. God has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. Thank you.